This is West Virginia Morning on West Virginia Public Radio. I'm Beth Voorhees. Dominion Resources officially announced a new partnership yesterday that will pump billions of cubic feet of natural gas a day out of West Virginia. That is if a federal regulatory commission approves the project. As Ashton Mara reports, the proposed project is years in the making, but already has environmentalists up in arms.
The nearly $5 billion project has Dominion Resources teaming up with North Carolina's Duke Energy and Piedmont Natural Gas, as well as Atlanta-based AGL Resources, to lay 550 miles of pipeline. Starting in southern Harrison County, the proposed tract would cross through Lewis, Upshur, Randolph, and Pocahontas counties on its way to Virginia, eventually pumping more than 1.5 billion cubic feet of natural gas each day to Virginia and North Carolina, places where the demand for fuel is growing.
Gas historically comes into those areas from the Gulf of Mexico.
Bob Orndorff is Dominion's managing director for state and local affairs.
That gas from the Gulf of Mexico is not a growing supply like it is in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Ohio.
Orndorff says the Marcellus and Utica shale regions of those states have an abundance of natural gas that all four companies expect to continue to grow, bringing jobs and tax revenue to the state. The Atlantic Coast Pipeline, as the project is titled, is estimated to create more than 17,000 jobs, according to Dominion. About 3,100 of those will be in West Virginia. Most of them will be temporary construction jobs, but an increase in demand means an increase in supply, which could lead to more jobs on drilling sites. But Leslie McCarty with the Greenbrier Watershed Association says she's not sure the economic good outweighs the possible environmental bad. Her organization teamed up with the West Virginia Highlands Conservancy to detail the negative impacts in a fact sheet. It includes things like clear-cutting trees through the Monongahela and George Washington National Forests, impacts to the water quality of at least a half a dozen rivers and streams, and decreases in the property values of homes nearby. McCarty says the state should be focused on energy diversification.
Are we going to continue to put all of our eggs in the fossil fuel basket? I mean, this is a fossil fuel.
Orndorff says Dominion has and will continue to reach out to stakeholders like McCarty, who will be affected by the pipeline, but adds they're a long way from starting construction. The announcement Tuesday means the company will begin the application process through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission by studying the environmental, historical, cultural, and other impacts. That application process takes 18 months to 2 years, Orndorff says. Then they'll have to get permission from the state and municipalities, as well as landowners. Barring any regulatory delays, construction is expected to begin in the summer of 2016 and be completed in 2018. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara.
The debate about gas drilling and other energy sources frequently focus on greenhouse gases that cause global warming. What you eat can have a big impact on the climate, too. But lowering your carbon footprint might mean giving up some all-American favorite foods, like hamburgers. In the latest from the Allegheny Front's Climate Chronicles series, Kara Halsoppel reports on the place where climate science and food culture meet. Your plate.
Len Frankel only has a minute to talk. He's rushing between presentations at the University of Pittsburgh's Johnstown campus. It's the North American Vegetarian Society's annual gathering. Frankel's traveled from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. He's not just vegetarian, he's
a vegan for about 10 or 11 years.
That means he doesn't eat meat or butter or anything made from animals. He started for animal welfare and health reasons. But now, climate change weighs heavily on Frankel's mind.
Our personal health doesn't mean squat, with the future looking so terrible for life on the planet.
Most people at this vegetarian festival are like Frankel. They seem to want to go even further with their diets, often for environmental reasons. Take animal advocate Lee Hall, for example.
I graduated with a second legal degree with a focus on climate change.
She's here from Philadelphia to give talks about diet and the environment. And she's trying to start a movement.
The idea of dietary divestment.
Just like environmental groups and religious organizations have been campaigning for banks and universities to dump investments in fossil fuels that contribute to climate change. Hall says people could stop investing in livestock agriculture, which accounts for one-fifth of all greenhouse gas emissions. One study found the diets of heavy meat eaters create about twice the greenhouse gas of vegetarians. Another study points the finger at beef. Its author, Gidon Eshel, says eating just about anything but beef would be an improvement.
In the case of beef versus pork, we're talking in land 50 times, and in the case of greenhouse gases, something like 8 times.
Tilling and fertilizing soil for crops that feed cattle produces greenhouse gases, and the cows themselves belch out the greenhouse gas methane. But Eshel says, let's face it, society isn't going to become vegan en masse to deal with global warming. Plant-based foods are gaining some ground, though. A company making an eggless mayonnaise made headlines when Bill Gates invested. In Pittsburgh, a popular blogger, Leia Lizarondo, is working to make plant-based food more palatable in a meat and pierogies town. Tonight, Lizarondo is volunteering at a fundraising dinner. She lowers meatless, eggless, dairyless fritters into hot oil.
Fried dough always wins. The easiest path to conversion.
Even if it's not the more wholesome food she usually promotes. For another entree option at this dinner, someone sauteing pork. While Lizarondo's fritters sizzle and pop, she explains one of the reasons she doesn't use the term vegan when she connects diet to health and the environment.
We have to meet people where they are. And while 5% of, you know, us are vegan, you know, there's the 95% who aren't. And I'm more interested in starting conversations to possibly influence the 95%.
Out in the dining room, Tom Trung and his wife Megan ordered both the pork and the vegan fritter to share. Trung says it doesn't matter to him that one entree is vegan.
If it tastes good, then it's fine by me, yeah.
So while many of us aren't willing to skip the meat at a meal, some would say the fact that half the food on the plate is vegan is a win for the planet. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Carol Holsapple.
The Allegheny Front is an award-winning public radio program covering environmental issues in western Pennsylvania, airing on WESA in Pittsburgh and on stations throughout the region. For more stories, go to AlleghenyFront.org. This is West Virginia Morning. It's coming up on 743. Some fog this morning, becoming partly sunny today with temperatures in the 80s, partly cloudy overnight with lows in the 60s. Mostly sunny on Thursday. There's a slight chance of some rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures remaining in the 80s, partly sunny on Friday.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by WVU Children's Hospital, serving the healthcare needs of all West Virginia's children. Located in Ruby Memorial Hospital, online at WVUKids.com.
In a Morgantown City Council meeting last night, an ordinance to limit heavy truck traffic through the city's downtown business district passed 6-1. Glennis Board reports.
It was the final vote on whether or not to limit the heavy trucks that travel through downtown Morgantown along State Route 7. For years, residents and businesses have complained about the truck traffic. After a short public hearing and an hour and a half of deliberation, last night's vote is the first real action to address those concerns.
The ordinance was specifically written to be easily enforced.
Evan Hansen is a local downtown business owner and a member of the group Safe Streets Morgantown, which crafted the ordinance. He spoke during the public hearing that preceded the vote.
To be clear, this is not an overweight truck ordinance. No scales are required because the ordinance is based on the truck's declared gross weight, which is written on the registration card.
The proposed ordinance would see trucks weighing 13 tons or more rerouted around the downtown area. There's a long list of exceptions to the rule, like government and emergency vehicles, delivery vehicles, and any vehicle that receives a permit beforehand. Questions that held up the vote were mostly those concerning enforcement, such as personnel, training, equipment, and signage. Even though no one showed up to speak against the ordinance, there's a lot of uncertainty among council members and the city manager about how the ordinance will be received by state and federal departments of highways, as well as companies which might doubt the city's ability to enforce such an order. Earlier this summer, the West Virginia Department of Highways said such an ordinance would not be valid without approval from the Commissioner of Highways. City Manager Jeff Mikorski said earlier that approval was unlikely. In the end, council members mostly agreed that if challenged, the ordinance would likely stand in a court of law. The one member who voted against the ordinance said he wasn't comfortable enough with the plan to vote yes. Council members did pass an amendment to make the ordinance effective 90 days from passage instead of effective immediately. They hope that the three-month window is sufficient to work out the logistics of implementation. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
September is National Preparedness Month. The West Virginia Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management wants citizens, businesses, and communities to make sure they're ready in the event of disaster. Sarah Lowther-Hensley reports.
When any type of severe weather is in the forecast, Facebook and other social media light up with all sorts of jokes and comments about panicked people making a run on stores for milk, bread, and toilet paper. While paying attention to weather forecasts is smart, waiting until the last minute to make sure you have important basic supplies is not. That's the message of National Preparedness Month.
You need to think about, what do I need to be okay?
If you're not prepared, it could be chaos.
It was extremely scary knowing that I was actually in danger.
This is not in your control. Prepare yourself for whatever may happen.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency is reaching out with public service announcements like this one in hopes that people take action to be ready in case disaster strikes. They say you should plan ahead, and part of that plan is to know how you would survive and get along for up to 3 days without key resources, such as electric, water, access to a supermarket, telecommunications, and perhaps even public safety services. State emergency officials say you should make sure you identify sources of information in your community that would be helpful before, during, and after an emergency. You should make a plan for what to do in the event of an emergency. You should build an emergency supply kit, and you should get involved in helping your community plan ahead. Suggestions and tips for how to take these steps can all be found online at ready.gov. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Sarah Lowther-Hensley in Fairmont.
Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.